This programme was funded with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Hello, my name is Tom Brady and welcome to the series Living with the Border. The border cut off natural hinterlands, separated communities and neighbours that had lived together for years. While the hardships people suffered as a result of the border have been well documented, these programmes intend to look at the funnier side of living along the border.
My guest today is Brendan Coughlin, a former customs officer who worked for many years on the Louth border.
Welcome to the programme, Brendan.
Thanks, Tom.
You're a native of County Westmeath. What was it like growing up in Kilbeggan, was it?
Kilbeggan, born outside Tullamore. When I was quite young, my parents moved. So I moved across the border into Westmeath. I suppose I knew very little about borders at that stage, but I knew when I crossed the county boundary, because I went to school in Tullamore, secondary school. So it was a bit like our present-day border, I suppose. Pretty much unmarked, except for the change in the road surface, depending on which county had the most money at any particular time.
You're a retired customs officer. What was your first posting?
My first posting was, well, I suppose coming into the service, I would have found myself wandering around Dublin Port for a while. Subsequently, I spent some months in Clonus in County Monaghan, which was indeed an experience because I knew absolutely nothing about border or land frontier, as they referred to it in those days. So it was quite an eye-opener for me to move out of Dublin Port, where there were quite a mixture of people, in what was, I suppose, among younger colleagues. It was a time, I suppose, of great hope and development. The Masses second programme for economic expansion was taking place. People were talking about tourism and encouraging tourism. We were going to reduce our tariffs on goods. It was a time of expansion as well. We opened new customs posts. It was realised at that stage we needed to attract more tourism and hence more money into the country. I suppose as a young fella starting in a new service and first job, I was pretty ignorant and unaware of all these things, but it's in retrospect one sees how things developed and indeed how far back we were in those days. Because remember, we didn't have the mobile phone, we didn't go to the hole in the wall. Anybody that could afford to go abroad on a vacation or, well, you had a traveller's check. You had to go into the bank and get your traveller's check. So our technology was not anything like the things that people take for granted today.
Yeah. And was that your first time on the border?
Absolutely. I had no idea what the border was like.
What do you think of the border?
Remember, we had no television. So all my information was from radio. So I had no idea what the border, apart from rumour, when I was in digs in Dublin by a few people who were from Dundalk describing it and telling me how you could go north and get lots of razor blades and stuff like that, and you could walk across the border with this stuff. And I thought, this can't be real. But then during training in Dublin, I remember being taken up around the border area, seeing what was actually there. And it was around that time, I think, we opened about four new customs posts where we were going to provide more opportunities for people to come into the state. Because at that time, you could only cross at certain points. As you know probably yourself from your own experience, that border, it's 499 kilometres long, 200 public roads, and that's just public roads. So policing a border like that, and we often hear politicians since talking about sealing the border. Well, it's quite a job to seal that kind of distance. Most international frontiers, it is difficult to cross outside of the normal crossing points. Like I look at France and Italy, you have tunnels, you have mountains. And also you had a different political climate. Our early customs posts were temporary affairs. So government, in fact, couldn't improve the accommodation very much because it had to be a temporary building. Politically, it was quite unacceptable to say we will put in a permanent building there for our staff.
When did you come to Dundalk, by the way?
1966, I think.
1966. Where was the customs post based in Dundalk?
You had two streams of control at that stage. You had actual frontier posts, which were pretty close to the border, actual border. And the border, of course, was based on the county boundaries because the Boundary Commission of 1924-25 failed to get any kind of agreement on, and for various reasons. We could spend all day indeed talking about that, but the upshot of it was that the county boundary stayed as they were. And of course the state Saoirse Éireann, or the Free State as it was in 1923, in April of 1923, decided that they had to put up customs posts and protect goods and manufacturing behind that facility, if you like.
Yeah. So there was customs posts at Drumbilla?
It was Drumbilla, there was Carrickarden where I went. That's my first experience on the actual border. Apart from Clonus, I had spent a few months in Clonus.
Yeah.
There was Ferry Hill in Omeath. So that was allowing, if you like, Ferry Hill allowed Newry into the Cooley Peninsula, Carrickarden, the main Dublin Belfast. And then you had the Dundalk Armagh Road, which was Drumbilla. You move over a little bit further then, and we opened a new post at Cullaville, which was the Cross Madeleine Carrick Macross Road. So if you move on over then, you had Tullinagrow outside Castle Blaney. You can move on up into the mountains then, into Cavan and so on.
Oh, and
Monaghan, of course, you had a main road in Tighe Holland.
And what about Greenore and the railway station?
Well, these were, I would separate them in that Greenore was a port.
Oh, I see.
Even though it doubled up as a station for clearing goods also. As I say, you had two streams of traffic. As you had in most countries in Europe, you had a kind of a uniform staff here in Ireland, unarmed, of course. And you had, in a lot of Europe, there were armed frontier people. And then you had the people who looked after tariffs and cleared goods, which was considered a more, technical area, because, and it did become a very technical area when we joined Europe in 1972.
Right. So there were approved and unapproved roads. What was the difference?
Approved basically referred to traffic. Actually, they were referred in the law as approved routes rather than roads. And I remember being asked that at an interview at one stage. And the guy who was asking me was the guy who had actually drafted the regulations. So he was interested to know if I actually knew the difference. But for most people, one was the approved road, which you drove down with ease and you had your paperwork and so on. The other one was a road which crossed the border. Traditionally, it was part of the north-south before we had that division, before our little problems of 1922 onwards. Traffic crossed freely there, but when we set up customs posts, we no longer allowed car traffic, to cross those routes. So you had several roads, as I said, there are about 200 crossings altogether.
Yeah. And had you to have a permit, if you had a motor vehicle, had you to have a permit crossing the approved roads?
Yes, originally you started out with something that was continued probably incorrectly or technically incorrectly to refer to as a triptyque. A triptyque originally was where somebody went guarantor for the duty that would be payable on a motor vehicle. So you also, people often refer to it as bonding the car. And the bonding the car referred to somebody signing a piece of paper, going guarantor that if that car was smuggled and the duty wasn't properly discharged, that person was liable. So they had to have a stake either in the state, or if you went to Northern Ireland and you got a permit, you needed to know somebody in Northern Ireland.
Well, what powers had the customs men? They were in uniform.
Oh, yes, yes. What powers? Well, they had the powers to stop, to question, to put particular questions to people. And on the border, particularly mobile patrols, could in fact arrest somebody.
And search?
Oh, a search. Obviously search. Well, to go into private premises need a search warrant, but they could search all along the border. And traditionally, but they did a lot of other agency work in that regard, like receiver of wreck, where stuff came in off a ship or whatever. They were operating on behalf of the state again. So they introduced various, say, agricultural controls, prohibited goods and so on. Agency work undertaken, sometimes on behalf of other specialist departments. But it was easier to have a customs officer implement those regulations because he was in the front line.
Yeah. And did the people really understand what they could bring in from the north? The ordinary person, did they understand?
Well, I would say they understood very well. But, of course, the difference in prices at that time. We, from the foundation of the state until that period of economic development, had extremely high tariffs. So they understood the simple thing of going down maybe to a relative or somebody in Uri and comparing prices. And you couldn't but understand the huge difference that was there. And of course, Lamass's view on the thing was that by having very high tariffs, we were stopping competitive production of goods. As I would recall, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I think, for instance, clothing, which was sometimes bought by somebody if they went on a special weekend or trip northwards, it had something like 60%, which is a huge tariff altogether.
And as a customs officer, what would you be looking for? Where would if people wanted to conceal goods, where would they conceal them? In a motor car or...
Anywhere you can think of. There are different methods of smuggling, I suppose, and you have the straight smuggling, which came in the unapproved route, if you like, came across the fields, down a boreen, or whatever, and that was the big commercial smuggling. But where you had thousands of people crossing the border, people often came through the approved route and hoped that the particular officer on duty didn't identify that they had particular goods that were going to be charged with duty. So where would they conceal them? Well, sometimes people just took a chance and they put it in the boot and they were going through regularly and they all know me, so I'm safe enough, except when some youngster like myself didn't know them and arrived on the scene and maybe checked the boot and found stuff like that. So that was one of the things. Other things were people removed the back seat or they removed panels of the door or they I have seen stuff in a kid's cot at one stage.
I see. And had you female customs officer at the time?
Just shortly after I joined. Before I joined, you had females mostly stationed at the airport who actually could search females. But they weren't customs officers as such. They didn't have a commission. Shortly after I joined, it was, I guess equality was coming and women's lib was on the way. And my training, I can recall, there were two females who were training as customs officers with me. They had previously been involved at the airport as women searchers.
Oh, I see.
No. And they struck terror, let me tell you, into the local female population, particularly in Dundalk, when somebody who was coming through, perhaps on a bus, after visiting their relatives in Uri, and suddenly they found the female behind the counter asking them questions. Well, this was a whole different ball game.
Oh, I see. And we'll take a break now for a song. An appropriate song would be Transit Van by Seamus Moore.
Did you ever hear that one? I have heard that one indeed. Okay, that probably fits the bill all right.
Margaret Thatcher talking on TV, looks awesome serious, she says to me. There'd be no one in climbing if you all used a bit of initiative. I was on the dole, I was broken more, says I'll take her at her word. Got a loan from a credit union man, and bought myself a transit van. Me next step up the ladder now, I bought myself an outback sow. Crossed the border quite legally, collected the common market subsidy. Signed all the forms, handed back the pen, smuggled a sow back home again. 10 times a day I'd worked as planned, myself and the sow in the transit van. Travel sickness is so picked up, says I, it's time to diversify. Took all me money from the biscuit tin, filled a van to the roof with whiskey and gin. Around the south me wares I'd sell in public houses and hotels. There was never a guard or a customs man put his nose inside a transit van. At festivals and flas and fairs, if the crack was good you'd find me there. At all big matches in Croke Park, and I danced with Springsteen in the dark. I fought with the tinkers in Ballinasloe, I danced on streets around Lisstone. Mothers had their daughters warned, stay well away from the transit van. It'd been Lent and the drink rates low, I changed to carrying video. While on the road to Ballybay, found the customs roadblock on me way. The pace of order I got her turned, the engine roared and the tyres burned. 5 patrol carefully manned, we're in hot pursuit of the transit van. Through Cantibre I did go, I was heading for the County Mayo. Round the corner I hissed a dog, went over the ditch, landed in a bog. I sat in a bank, watched all I owned, sinking in a bog hole like a stone. She was lying on the...
Brendan, there was an upsurge in border trade in the 80s and 90s when the EU at the time introduced the first exchange rate mechanism in 1979. This broke the link between sterling and the euro. Was that a busy time for the customs?
Well, I suppose when exchange rates fluctuate and the particular local currency is favourable, you're always going to get people visiting and taking goods back. And no less, Ireland did face problems around that period. As far as I remember, we only got to grips with those problems when the Minister for Finance, Ray McSharry, brought in some pretty swinging legislation. So we had a thing called the 48-hour rule, and if you weren't out 48-hour rule, you got very reduced allowances. There were always allowances for people who went abroad, and those allowances applied, but they were severely restricted during the McSharry regulations. So the 48-hour rule was particularly difficult for the unfortunate staff on the front line to administer, because being told by the general public, this is illegal, it's contrary to EU rules, and people could in fact quote chapter and verse, and there were EU regulations which clearly set out what was allowed. But on the other hand, for the good of the country, we needed to implement that rule, and that rule was implemented pretty strictly.
Customs posts were generally removed from the border in 1973 as a result of the single EU market. How did it change the work of the customs?
Well, basically the customs were abolished. you had free internal movement within the EU. That meant all internal borders went.
During the height of the Troubles, the border was a dangerous place for customs men, guardie and soldiers. Did the customs ever come under attack at any stage? Or?
I have to say I wasn't on the border myself during those worst days, but yes, it was a dangerous place for any state official. Largely, I think they avoided serious confrontation, but from time to time, I think they would also have encountered perhaps a dangerous van or something like that, with a dangerous load, I should say, perhaps. But in general, I think any kind of confrontation was avoided. I know certainly I witnessed the experience of a gentleman coming in for some minor offence, and I think two days later he was involved in a bit of a shootout and was captured by the British Army just a few yards on the other side of the border. So I think we would have been aware of some of the things that were going on without maybe being directly involved.
The border was completely sealed off during the outbreak of the mad cow disease in 1996 and the foot and mouth disease in 2001. Did this reduce smuggling?
Well, I'd say from the smuggler's point of view, it was a darn nuisance. Whether it actually reduced smuggling, whether it disrupted regular trade or not, is very difficult to say. But certainly it can't have helped those who had deliveries to make at a particular time and date.
The Good Friday Agreement of 1998 was widely welcomed, especially in the Loud border. Did Dundalk benefit as a result of the Good Friday Agreement? It was peace and tranquility.
I think everybody benefited on both sides. Yes, the very thing you say, peace and tranquility, because we all remember before that, driving up the road any day, you might find that the particular road you were going, particularly the main road, was often blocked, as indeed was the railway line. How often have we heard of people being bussed from various areas where something was thought to be on the line? Sometimes there was something on the line, sometimes there wasn't. So the train was often stopped for several days, in fact.
Johnson's Lane was a favourite one.
It was. There was another one, I'm trying to think of, a bridge out there just at the border near Jonesborough, on the back road up to Jonesborough as well. Kilnasagart Bridge was a favourite stopping off point.
So it was good for trade, really. People from the north were moving freely up to Dundalk.
Oh, absolutely. I think it reduced costs to importers and exporters, in that there was no longer all that paperwork to be done. Certainly, and there is much talk about it today, the cost that would now be imposed on traders had we this famous hard border were it to come back across.
And how would you identify the border as such? Are you a mapper?
I think most officials on the border, certainly the people in the cars would, and the patrol cars would, have a very good idea of precisely where the border was, because any cases that would go into the criminal system, anybody that appeared in the Central Criminal Court as a witness, would have to give evidence that he had seen a particular consignment of goods crossing the border on a particular date at a particular time. So people were very familiar, and we did have Ordnance Survey maps. Usually a person from the Ordnance Survey office indeed was required to give evidence in such cases, most of them which were held in the Central Criminal Court in Green Street in Dublin.
Yeah. And how did the customs deal with petty smuggling? Say people smuggling cigarettes and things like that. Did they seize them, and was there a penalty to be paid?
Well, you say smuggling. First of all, if something was declared, always had the option of paying duty or abandoning it or re-exporting it. If it wasn't declared, that was a different thing then. It was then liable to seizure, and in many cases, in most cases. It probably was, depending again on the amount of duty and so on involved, and whether it was outside of the allowances. There were particular allowances for people who were bringing in goods, but you can bet most cases what we're talking about is something outside the allowance, something that somebody wanted to conceal. When we talk about petty smuggling, it probably would be something for their own use rather than to sell again. But occasionally, small amounts of goods for sale would also
and
be found.
The customs men had wide discretion.
Not such wide discretion, no. If something was prohibited or something was in excess, no, they were obliged to take action. So, in fact, unfortunately for people, you know, it did, and it was expensive sometimes, particularly in the earlier days when we had higher tariffs. They did end up paying a lot of money. They did end up without their goods, and goods were seized. And, of course, anybody who was a customs officer in those days would tell you that there was a great popular belief that the customs people at the border had a wonderful time in that they gorged themselves off these various products that were so easily seized and so on. The reality, of course, was much different for a couple of reasons. One, when something was seized, it was immediately required to be written up in a book. And once it went in there in black and white, then it was followed through the system until delivery to the state warehouse. And if you arrived at the state warehouse, let me tell you, the guy who was in charge there, if he was a penny down on anything, he suddenly started an inquiry. So there was no getting out of it there.
But the customs were generally held in high esteem, and they got on well with the people in Louth.
I think generally so, yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes, but like every individual, there were some cantankerous guys and there were some guys who were very nice, and perhaps the two nice guys maybe didn't do the state all that much service, but they were popular with the general public.
What is the future with Brexit?
Ah, that is the big one. If I had that answer to that one, Tom, I would certainly be putting on a good bit of money on it, but I wouldn't actually risk anything at the moment. It's obviously a decision that has technical and political aspects to it. And the political aspect, no doubt, will be a big, big factor in whatever final decisions are made. Certainly you can get technical approaches that would mean that we would never go back to a border as it was in those days, because technology has moved ahead as well and there are various things can be done. But I would say predominantly you're going to see some political decisions having to be made, and that will determine everything at the end of the day.
So the peace process made the border less important. So a hard border could make it more important again.
Well, the peace process is one consideration, as I say, within the whole political dimension. And the peace process certainly changed life for all of us, because most of us at some stage or other would have gone up that road and maybe sat at an army checkpoint while a knowing young fella looked at your driving licence sometimes upside down. We didn't have photographs early on. I can remember one young fella looking very knowledgeably at my driving licence, realising that there was some foreign language on it for a start, and then trying to impress me with how safe I looked, and sent me on my way. But he had been looking at the thing upside down.
Thank you, Brendan, for your enlightened interview.
Not at all. You're welcome.
Thanks, Brendan, for sharing your memories. Goodbye from Tom Brady, and thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the programme.
This programme was funded with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.